what it means to miss New Orleans and miss it each night and day. I know I'm not wrong, the feeling's getting stronger the longer I stay away. Miss the moss-covered vines, the tall sugar pines, where mockingbirds used to sing. I'd like to see the lazy Mississippi hurrying into spring.
Good morning, and welcome to the October edition of Black Book Talk. I am Patricia Welch, Librarian Emeritus. With me this morning is my co-host,
Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman. Good morning.
Okay, and our guest for the day is Kay Ibura, and we are going to talk about her latest book, Tempest. This is a fascinating book, perfect for Halloween, but actually perfect for any time of the year. Welcome to Black Book Talk, Kay.
Thanks so much for having me.
I love this book. Technically speaking, it's classified as YA, but I got to tell you, this book had me doing things. I'm sitting there doing hand things, trying to mirror what the character was doing. I was all in. So please, give us just a little synopsis. We don't want to get all the good stuff out there, but tell us a little bit about this book.
Sure. Tempest is a character who has lost her parents early. She lost her parents in Katrina and was raised by her grandmother in isolation. And the reason why Patricia is mentioning hand motions is because the main character can control the wind, and she does that with her hands. But her grandmother wants to keep her safe from people who might want to use that power. She has a little turning point right at the beginning of the book that kind of kicks off her need to leave home, move to New Orleans with family she never knew before. And she's basically from that point in a race to discover who she is, to discover who might be after her, and what her mission is in life and how she can keep herself and her loved ones safe.
I captured
everything there.
You did. I too love this book. And I was wondering, it says young adult book, but what specific ages did you think would enjoy this book? Because I deeply enjoyed the book.
You know, I think that's something about YA that's exciting, is that everybody reads YA, even though it's categorized for young adults. That's what YA stands for, young adults, for older teens up into, early 20s. But I find that everybody enjoys YA, and there's a lot of space for a lot of different explorations and different genres. I think that the YA umbrella is exciting because of that, because it kind of lets you kind of do whatever. You're still speaking to a younger audience, but it's something that is, I think, relatable to readers of almost any age.
Right. Veronique, better known as V, because everybody has a nickname, but Veronique really has lived an extremely constrained life. I mean, basically, it's been her and her grandmother. She's homeschooled. They're in this teeny tiny little town. It's a big deal, as I recall, when she goes out to some event where they're doing Zydeco.
Yes.
But I mean, this child goes from living a life of basically one of them being in a very small town to coming to New Orleans. So I mean, her coming of age was really accelerated.
Correct.
Just tell us a little bit more about that. Why?
You know, I was thinking about a character who's happy with a small life, that she's not been dreaming of a different life, partly because she's not felt that friction that there's anything strange about the way that she grew up. And I think when you have a fish out of water story, it kind of gives you the opportunity to really dig into the character, and the character starts to have to define themselves in a way that she never really had to before she moved to New Orleans. And I think it's an interesting parallel because she's physically like having to figure out her life and all these external things that are happening and who's after her. At the same time, she's learning how to define who she is in relationship to a family, in relationship to boys, in relationship to school. So she's actually having this internal journey at the same time as having this external journey. And I thought that was just a really interesting thing to explore.
I found this book to be different. And so I wondered, was there anything in your personal life that inspired you to write such a magical story?
I love that word, different. I'm a little bit different, I would say, as a writer. And when I say different, I don't mean that there aren't other writers that like to do things that are off the wall. But I like to explore something different in each of my books. And I like to explore different voices, different styles, different situations. And that's what I find exciting as a writer, to kind of set up a situation and really try to get under the skin of something and have something to figure out for me as a writer as I'm writing the book. I don't want to have it all figured out, you know, when I start the book. So there were a few things I was looking at with this book. I'm from New Orleans. I'm from pre-Katrina New Orleans. And I had written a whole novel in New Orleans that's still on my hard drive. And I'd written it and finished it before Katrina, never published it, never finished the book. So this was an opportunity, I think, for me to kind of connect to the New Orleans of my childhood. And I'm not saying that I'm ignoring all the changes that have happened to the city. When I go home, they call it the new New Orleans. And that's code for, oh, this is some kind of expat thing that has come into our city. This is something that's changing our city. You know, when they say it's new New Orleans, I'm like, oh, okay, I understand. So there are a lot of things that are happening to the city that's not reflected in the book. And I think this book, one person who read it, wrote a comment online that said it was like a love letter to New Orleans. And I didn't think of it that way. But when she said that, I thought, yeah, like I'm not really trying to do a historical moment, but really to just express life and living in New Orleans, as opposed to, you know, you already have Mardi Gras and you know all of those things and the second lines and all those things, but people live there. People live regular lives there. And there's a very vibe. There's a very interesting vibe to growing up in New Orleans. And so I wanted to share some of that in the book.
This book is very much a mystery. There are just so many surprises. And, you know, we all read a whole lot of books, so we think we know. I was like, oh yeah, well, I know what's gonna happen when he's gonna, you cannot predict this book. But this child there's so many secrets.
Yes.
You know, tell us a little bit just about her background, about her parents, about what her family situation is. And thank you so much for her family in New Orleans. Thank you for Brother Asim.
Yes.
Thank you for Auntie Eve.
Yes.
And tell us about her New Orleans family, because it was just good to see this family.
Yeah. So I actually can go back to two things, to Emma's note about me being different and your note about what I was trying to do with the book. That's another piece. Although I'm from New Orleans, I'm also different in New Orleans in that I grew up with parents who were activists, parents who kind of created their own community. It was called Ahidiana, so I went to an independent school. So I was, in a way, a fish out of water in terms of what life was expected to be. We didn't have TV, we were vegetarians. There were all these things that are normal now that was my upbringing. So I wanted to reflect a family that sort of reflected the norm when I was growing up, that we had a lot of books in the home and they were concerned about what we were eating. And, you know, just the family unit was so core, that nuclear family unit was so core. So I wanted to reflect all of that in the family she was moving into. She could have had more friction coming into a new home, but I thought she had so much to deal with. Why would that be necessary? Why not have a soft place to land? Because her life was so topsy-turvy. So it's exciting to me to be able to put a little bit of that on the page, because my upbringing was so different and unique, and we were strange as kids, natural hair, all the things. Everybody was very curious about us growing up. So to be able to put a little slice of that in the book was good.
And it was normal. Okay, I mean, well, I'm much older than you, so I've seen a lot of different things come through. And I knew people, I said, okay, I've seen, maybe he's a Muslim, Eve, she didn't change her name. But it's just that I knew people who were Muslims. I mean, you know, Nation of Islam Muslims and also traditional Muslims, and people who were careful about what they ate. And the thing is, for it to be put in this book as being the norm.
Yes.
Loving.
Yes.
That just, I think, was very important. But again, tell us a little bit about these parents. why is she just with her grandmother and now she's with this family that she didn't even know? Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm trying to figure out how to do that without being having spoilers, but.
Okay, one of the things that Emma and I were discussing, and maybe we missed it. The only thing that we know about her dad is that he did not make it through Katrina. Well, neither of her parents made it through Katrina, right?
Right.
We're told. Right. Okay, well, and maybe that's you know something, because I don't want spoilers.
Yeah.
So let's go beyond that and go to the fact that this little girl wants to be normal.
Yes.
That's a theme throughout. She wants to be a normal teen, as all teenagers do.
Right.
And for her to make that trip, and to have a wonderful cousin who kind of takes along. Talk about that relationship and just that whole theme of what is normal and why, you know, we want to be quote unquote normal. And we also want to say hi to OB Hill, our third co-host. OB, hey.
Good morning.
Morning. And after, you know, that's a good question. As you ask it, I'm also thinking about the fact that the quest for normal is really a fictional quest, right? There's nobody who is going to fit whatever that box or square description that you're thinking about, because when you think about the friends that she had, her boyfriend, all of that, they each had their own thing that they were dealing with that was different, that had made them a little bit different than other people. So there really is no real quest to be normal. But I think what she was desiring when she said she wanted to be normal was stability, peace, calm. You want just not to be attacked and not to be in danger, you know? And so that word normal, I think, stood in for so many things for her, and that she felt that maybe there was a place where she could just be, you know? And for her, I think that is what she was trying to express when she was saying she just wanted to be normal.
OB, you're new to the to today's show. You have a question?
I feel like a tempest. I was walking in the rain trying to get up here. But what I liked about the book is family matters, the ability to make transitions from one situation to another and be accepted in peace and love.
Yeah, and I do like the character Eve. I can say that she is Veronique's aunt. That's her mother's sister. And she's not known this aunt. And this aunt has a bit of a tough exterior. And she finds out over the course of the book that her aunt also has a very deep love for her, no matter what kind of face that she presents. And so I did enjoy really being able to talk about to those family bonds. Her cousin, who is a little bit, you know, straining against her family, she wants to be, you know, she wants to hang out and she wants to eat things that her dad doesn't want her to eat, and she wants to be her own person. But she does it from the safety of that love that she has. She knows she has that foundation of her family. She knows she even has Kez, who she's always fighting with. She has a foundation that Veronique doesn't, you know, and her ability to be wild and break the rules is really based in the fact that she's actually safer than Veronique. And so Veronique doesn't feel safe to make those choices. So it was also an opportunity to look at what family gives us, how that foundation really gives us the opportunity to explore ourselves in ways that other people maybe who don't have those bonds and that safety maybe don't have.
Do you do a day job or are you a full-time writer?
Oh, I love that question. I was recently, I'm in that wave of people who've been laid off recently, but when I wrote Tempest, I had a full-time job. Every book that I've written while having a full-time job. So I'm in a little moment here that I'm like, will I be able to write the next book as a full-time writer before I have to transition to whatever's next? That will be unique for me, you know? So I am working on the outline for another book, and I have another few projects that I'm working on. So I may be a full-time writer for a brief pause till I figure out what's next. And I am looking at this as an opportunity, but no, in general, I will say that I'm not a full-time writer. I have had a day job this whole time. And it's a challenge. It's a challenge. You have to really be committed to like burn, you know, the candles in the morning and the night, you know, so that you can get the work done. And it definitely is a sacrifice and a commitment. But then you get a book baby out of it. So
you read a passage from the book. Do you have a copy of the book handy?
I do. So I will read this section. This is the first chapter. That is the turning point. She's just saved a little boy who was hanging from a bridge. It's the middle of the night. She snuck out and saved this little boy. I'll read this starting here. Okay. I took a deep breath, rippled my fingers, then yanked my hands back. A wild yell of terror rang out as the winds tugged the child through the air, dragging that small body above the river and hurtling straight toward me. As soon as the child cleared the riverbank, I released my hands and let them flop at my sides. A little boy tumbled to the ground, landing with a thud next to my feet. He stared up at me, both of us trembling, as the winds flew away. How did you do that? He asked when he found his voice. I didn't, I lied. The boy's eyes narrowed. Yes, you did. I shook my head, didn't. The boy jumped to his feet. His t-shirt was torn and there were scratches on his hands and arms. You the only one out here. I was searching for a better lie to tell when I recognized him. One day, a few years ago, Mama told me to put on the one dress I owned. We climbed into her pickup truck and drove 1.5 hours into town. She led me into a huge building with music posters covering the walls and an excited crowd gathered in front of a small stage. What is this? I asked, confused. All my life, she had pushed people away, and now she had thrust us in the middle of a crowd. This was the opposite of avoiding people. Where are, Mama cut me off. Even deserts get a little bit of rain, she said. Before I could ask another question, a band walked onto the stage with their accordions and guitars, drumsticks and washboards. When they started playing, the music felt like pure gold pouring over me. In the center of the stage was Big Bo, foot thumping and violin blow flying. His voice shouted and growled lyrics, showering us with the electricity. Mama grabbed my hands and pulled me onto the dance floor. We swayed and spun until I felt like glitter was raining down on me. I'm gonna skip a little bit. Just a few months ago, I was spinning myself around the dance floor, wild and free, when Big Bo had introduced this little boy to the audience. He had climbed onto the stage, his face beaming with pride. When he started singing, time and space disappeared. I stopped dancing instantly and listened as his husky voice fell soft in my soul. I'm not the same, he sang, not the same one you left behind. I want to let you know, just in case you change your mind. The memory brought a smile to my lips. You're Big Bo's boy, I said, the grin still lingering on my face. A look of fear flashed in the boy's eyes. He hunched over, hiding his head in his hands. Don't cry, I whispered, kneeling down and rubbing his back. You're safe now. You're gonna tell, the boy said. I put my arm around his shoulders and pulled his shaking body close. I won't. I promise, I said. We won't tell anyone about tonight. He sniffed and peeked up at me from behind his palms. You won't tell, Big Bo? I shook my hand. As long as you won't tell anyone about what happened. He uncovered his face and wiped his eyes with his knuckles. His face grew serious. I promise I won't tell a soul, he said. I held out my hand and he grasped it, squeezing with his fingers to seal our promise. Then we fell silent as we turned away from the bridge to find our way back through the woods. I sent a silent prayer into the night that the boy would keep my secret safe, but the trees loomed overhead, rustling and echoing Mama's warnings. I imagined her next to us, shooting me a look of disappointment. Don't you know, child, I could hear her whispering, the things you hide in the dark always come out in the light.
Thank you.
As soon as Momo entered the story, I felt immediately at home.
Mm.
It's a term of endearment we use a lot in the South. Our grandmother, our father's mother, we called Mo.
Mm-hmm.
So I that you included such things.
Yeah, it was interesting too when I turned in the manuscript. So many people had so many problems saying Mama. And I was like, okay, you know, you write things that are maybe natural to you from home and you don't know that it's so different to other people, you know? But I love hearing you say that because it is such a term of endearment.
The Southern culture that you have in here from Louisiana, I think about Ville Street and places like that. Some of my family comes from there. But the title, I looked all the way through the book and I finally found it in the 37th chapter. On page 284, could you just read that paragraph?
Let's see. You guys are close readers.
Now you have librarians all here. You have a bookseller.
I love that. Okay, let's see if I can find the paragraph. Which paragraph is it? The third?
Let's see, one.
Oh, I see it. Mm-hmm. I see it. So just that paragraph?
Yes, that'll be fine.
Okay. So in this scene, basically, she's, I would say, leaning into the fullness of her power. She spent most of the book figuring out the depth, you know, of her power, both her emotional power and her power with the winds. Soon, I was blinded by the tempest storming inside me. I kept raging until an intense heat radiated on my shoulders, pulling my attention away from the battle. Through the haze of the winds, I felt... See, I'm not going to say who. I felt someone standing next to me, her hand on my back. I turned to see that her mouth was moving, but I could not hear her over the roar of my blast. Slowly, I released the winds, and they fell away, one strand at a time.
No.
So, yeah, she's the tempest, for sure.
Now, there were three other people who escaped. And it sort of leads me to think that there is a follow-up to this, because if they could be found, let's see what happens to their mindset and what they thought after they left.
Yeah, there's definitely potential. We originally planned for this to be a two-book deal, but we ended up having discussions about not writing the next book quite yet. So the possibility definitely is there.
I'm so glad you asked that question, Obi. It was going to be mine. But see, folks who are listening, see, we're sitting here talking about the next book. So that tells you, you need to read this book. You know, even though the child had, she had a peaceful life, she had a tranquil life, and probably didn't know what she was missing in some areas. But also, as the excerpt that you read first shows us, this child had a secret. And to have to live your life, even back in the tranquil life with her grandmother, with Mama, she had this secret. And I mean, what does that do to you that no matter where she was, she has this secret. And it's about her and the wind. And I think we can talk about that. I mean, talk about what she can do with the wind, what that means to her, what nature means to her. Because I mean, the trees are a part of her life. They're alive. And I'm putting a lot of stuff in here, but let's just talk about the fact this child, her life was formed by this secret.
Yes, and for her, I think most of the time it wasn't a secret because there wasn't anyone around who could find out. And I think
she knew not to show it to anybody.
She knew not to share it
before saving that child.
Yeah, so I think for her, what felt more like a burden was that her grandmother kept telling her that she couldn't, and she didn't understand, you know? And that is part of the journey of the book, is to understand why her grandmother was so adamant about her hiding her powers. And she listened and she was obedient to her grandmother, but she just really didn't understand, you know? And I do feel like for her, primarily, it is a part of her personality. It's a part of who she is. So you mentioned the trees. Her home is surrounded by all this huge forest. And so she spends a lot of time with the trees and the interaction between the trees and the winds, that it's a beautiful sort of expression for her. The winds are a constant companion. If anything, they're her best friend. So it's who she plays with. It's who comforts her. It's what she turns to when she's feeling upset. She lets out her anger and her rage through the wind. So that power is everything to her. It's an extension of her. So to have to hide it is definitely something that's frustrating and painful for her. And I think she probably felt freer living at home because there weren't that many people that she needed to hide it from. But moving into a denser environment with less trees and less freedom, then there was a limiting force that she didn't have to deal with for most of her life.
Are you going on tour with this book?
I'm not going on tour. I've gone to New Orleans already and did two events there, which was great. I did an event here in New York, and I'm happy to go and do events, but you know, I wouldn't say I'm a new author, but I'm not a bling bling author. So, you know, I don't have a tour budget, but I definitely will respond to invitations and lean on a publisher and see if there's anything that we can do. I am headed to the Louisiana Book Festival in November. So I'm excited about that, and I will be able to meet other local writers and national writers will be celebrating books, and I'll be continuing to just represent Tempest and Veronique, who's now a friend of mine in my heart.
We have about a minute left. Is there anything that you would like to share with our listeners in this remaining moment?
I think the other thing I'd like to share is that I hope that Veronique for Readers is also a symbol of finding that own thing within yourself and learning to nurture it and take care of it. You know, I hope that there's something in her journey that can help readers feel like they want to explore what's inside of them and support it and sort of find a community that will strengthen them in the way that she's had to do throughout the book.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Listeners, again, the book is Tempest. It's by Kay Ibura, and the last name is spelled I, B as in boy, U as in under, R as in Richard, A as in apple, so there should be no problem with you finding it. Come on, we in the town of Powell. You can find it. Tempest by Kay Ibura. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully you will come through again, or when your next book comes through, we want a sequel.
Okay.
Let us know, and we'll invite you back.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, this is Patricia Welch, Librarian Emeritus, saying good reading to you this month, and we'll see you in November.
See you in November.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Phil!